prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, sitting in for Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We're going to bring you commentary and opinion on the economic events and political events of our day. We'll have Wendy Wilson will be here in a moment from the Apothecary Herbs. And before we do that, let's talk about the markets. Gold is up $11.80 today to $1,278.10 per ounce. Silver's up 29 cents to $17.49 per ounce. Platinum is up 13 bucks to 1,069. Palladium is up 12 to 611. Been a good day for metals across the board, and it's one of those things that, you know, yesterday was not a good day. Today is a good day. You wonder what it means. What does all this volatility indicate? And to me, it means that gold is kind of sitting at a point where, and the metals, gold in particular, silver also, maybe even silver more so, but sitting at a point where they are about to go, but they can't quite get liftoff just yet, and therefore we're having a certain amount of volatility. Crude oil's up $1.42 today to $46.08. Crude has been on a tear for the last, it was $26 not so long ago. It has almost doubled in price in just the last couple of months. Prior to that, in the previous year, it had lost 70% of its value, so it's not so astonishing that it would perhaps double in the last 6-8 weeks. U.S. dollar index is down 0.44 to 93.82. To me, that's the significant indicator right now. It appears that they want to hold the dollar at somewhere around 94. But it may be that if it breaks below 94, it's going to drop dramatically. Dow Jones is down 215 points to 17,712. NASDAQ is off 48 points to 4,862. New York Stock Exchange down 83 points to 10,340. Standard & Poor's off 19 points to 2,065. That pretty much wraps up the markets for the day. Wendy Wilson is here. Hello, Wendy. Are you here and in the present?
I am in the present, Al. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I thought we'd talk about, you know, the dementia epidemic and, you know, what's going on with that. Have you heard about it?
Yeah, well, I'm aware of it. That's hard. It's just something that even concerns me a certain amount, because my father died of Alzheimer's at age 88. And it's the sort of thing that as a senior citizen who has his occasional senior moments, you know, it gets me talking to myself.
Well, you know, according to authorities, the U.S. has an epidemic of dementia. And, you know, I am asking, well, what constitutes an epidemic? Well, apparently you have 5 million Americans that are having cognitive difficulties. So if this is accurate, that's kind of an outrageous percentage. And medicine is boasting that, you know, life expectancy is much higher now for Americans and they're living longer. But I'm saying, well, if you're living longer, what good is that if you don't have your cognitive function? So according to InsideDementia.com, they say the word dementia is a term used to describe a broad category of disease due to nerve cell malfunction. So apparently there's more than 100 different forms of dementia. And this would include things like Parkinson's, vascular dementia, which would be a stroke, Alzheimer's, and even a category called mixed dementia, where 45% of the cases have a combination of Alzheimer's and another type of dementia. So when the brain nerve cells begin to die or malfunction, there are changes to our memory. And when our brain nerve cells begin to die and damage starts to continue, then you get brain nerve cell death, and that's when it can affect an individual's ability to carry on even basic bodily functions like grooming and walking and swallowing. So Alzheimer's disease, most common, diagnosed at about 80% of the cases. And the term dementia, Al, is Latin. It began to be used in 50 BC. It means being out of one's mind. And so here are some of the stats, and we got some interesting stats here. 40% of the dementia cases are happening to people under the age of 65, and a majority of these cases, regardless of age, are happening to females. So I'm asking, why do women have a 10 to 20% greater risk of dementia over the men? Well, they're telling us that 1 in 11 people over the age of 65 will have some form of dementia, but if you're female, over the age of 65, those statistics are 1 in 6. Now, according to Inside Dementia, they say that 35 million Americans with dementia in 2010, and they are expecting 65 million by 2030, 115 million by 2050. So I'm asking, what could be driving these outrageously high projections? Even the University of Michigan says dementia is on the rise. You have any idea, Al, what could it be?
Well, it's got to be something in the environment. And by environment, I'm not just talking about the birds and the bees. I'm talking about in the water, in the air, something the medical, the doctors are giving us.
Well, you are spot on as usual. And, I wanted to know what the mortality rate was. Health authorities say 1 in 3 Americans over the age of 65 are going to die from dementia. Dementia is the fifth leading cause of death in the U.S. And, you know, there's no effective treatment. American Medical Association, doctors, all they have is drugs to slow symptom development and, you know, to slow down the progression a little bit. But they don't have any cures for this. Now, I came across this map, Al. According to the Alzheimer's Association, they have this map, and they projected the rates of dementia in the United States for into 2025. So their map shows that there's a higher majority of these dementia cases, 82 to over 120% of them, are occurring in the Northwest states. So it's encompassing Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Nevada, Montana, Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado area. The second worst areas on the map, 50% to 80% of the cases, are occurring in the Southwest, South Central, and southeastern parts of the U.S. So that leaves the south, the central interior and the northeast seem to be below the 25th percentile in occurrence. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
I do too.
Yeah. So a modern medicine
you, if you're a conspiracy theorist, this is grist for your mill.
Well, a modern medicine says they expect most people as they age to develop some form of dementia. They equate the disease with old age. However, they're also saying that other causes could be genetics, head injury, heart disease, diabetes, high cholesterol, obesity, smoking, and surprisingly, low education. could be the form, the reason you have dementia. They don't have any tests for it, Al. Basically, they don't have any conclusive tests to determine Alzheimer's. Best the physicians do is a process of elimination, so they eliminate depression and trauma and infection and thyroid problems and nutritional deficiencies, tumors, until they arrive at a probable Alzheimer's disease category.
In other words, if they can't think of anything else, they say dementia.
Yeah, basically. Now, also they say dementia can have some hitchhike problems. If you get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, for instance, there are other health problems that tend to crop up, like vision problems like sleep apnea, insulin issues, and they also said patients with diabetes or sleep apnea have a greater risk of Alzheimer's, according to science. I think that's interesting. And I think you might find this interesting, too. According to a report from the National Health Institute, Americans' taxpayer dollars, we're forking over $580 million a year in Alzheimer's research. And to give you a comparison, we pay $6 billion in cancer research and $4 billion in heart disease research.
Now, they're not too serious about finding. And the numbers you were talking about earlier, if I heard the numbers correctly, someone was predicting there would be over 100 million people afflicted by Alzheimer's by 2050. Did I hear that correctly, or did I miss?
I believe 115. Mm-hmm.
115 yep. million.
Yeah.
We've got to be talking about 20% of the population.
Right. Right.
Well that's just absurd, and nobody's looking. They know this is coming, and they're not really doing much to stop it.
Well, I'm going to give you the heads up here why in just a second. Well, we should look at the possible causes, you know, because there are a lot of explanations why people could appear senile or have a dementia problem. And we should be careful to evaluate all the possibilities, because some of them could be right under our noses. And we can't really rely on healthcare professionals to admit that prescription medications could be the culprit for a vast majority of the dementia happening today. And in some cases, medications now are available over the counter. No prescriptions necessary. So the next question I have is, does medicine already know that certain types of medicine are causing damage to our brain cells producing dementia? And the answer is a definite yes. Here's a quote from Dr. Noel Campbell. He's a pharmacist, too. He says, we found that taking one anti-clone etteric drug significantly increased the risk of developing cognitive impairment. Taking two of these drugs doubles the risk, and this is a very significant and already known risk in the American population. I'm going to tell you what these classifications are. A vast majority of pain medicines are causing long-term damage to the brain. Other products that are also causing similar damage are insomnia medications, cardiovascular drugs, allergy medication, and drugs for incontinence. These fall into a class of drugs known as anticholinergic drugs because they block the acetylcholine brain neurotransmitter. Okay? And it causes damage. Here's a quote from Dr. Malaz Boustany. He's at the School of Medicine, IU School of Medicine. He says, simply put, we've confirmed anticholinergics can cause or worsen cognitive impairment, which involves gradual memory loss, end of quote. So they know this is happening. They know what the epidemic's about and what's causing it. So here's some.
And they don't
want
to cure it, because if they do, they're going to have to take those drugs off the market, which is going to bite into their profit stream.
Yeah, let's go over some of them drugs real quick. Here are some of the common drugs Americans are taking fairly regularly, which are pretty much destroying brain cells. Benadryl for allergy problems, Dramamine for motion sickness, Excedrin PM, Nitol for sleep, Somanex for sleep, Tylenol PM for sleep, Unisom for sleep, Paxil, antidepressant drugs or for excessive compulsive disorders, Detrol for overactive bladder and urgency, Demerol for pain and sleep, and Paxil, another antidepressant, anti-anxiety med. And this is just the tip of the iceberg, really. Drugs for anti-arrhythmia, antihistamines, antispasmodic drugs, anti-Parkinson's medication, muscle relaxants, tricyclic drugs for antidepressants, all, you know, pretty much going to be doing this. And here are some of the side effects of your drugs. In addition to your cognitive impairment, you get dry mouth and dry nose, lack of sweat, constipation, dizziness, drowsiness, unsteady on your feet, headaches, difficulty urinating, visual impairment or glaucoma, disorientation, difficulty swallowing, delirium, fatigue, high blood pressure, breathing difficulties, convulsions, behavior changes, hallucinations, severe muscle weakness, skin problems, and slurred speech. Now, remember that map I talked about real quick, Al? Remember that map?
No, I told you, I'm a senior citizen, and I'm having my episodes from time to time, so
okay,
tell us about
Alzheimer's
the map again.
The map the Alzheimer's Association had with the areas of the nation that have in the most difficulty with dementia. Well, based on their map and the drug-induced factor for dementia, we could conclude that certain areas of the country may be more disposed to depression, and other areas of the country may be more disposed to severe allergies, and people are on a bunch of those drugs, destroying their brain cells and causing cognitive problems. And we can also ascertain that people with sleep, vision, heart, insulin problems are on all these medicines, promoting various cognitive decline. And women seem to be more prone to anxiety, and they are probably on a ton of those medicines promoting more dementia, therefore the increase in the statistic. So I just think that, you know, there's plenty of natural nutritional solutions to help us get better sleep, to improve our vision problems, to reduce the need for diabetic drugs, heart drugs, anti-anxiety, depression. So before you risk your brain cells to prescription medications and dementia, you might want to give the folks at Apothecary Herbs a call and see what they have on the herbal front to give you a hand. You can visit them online at thepowerherbs.com or give them a call toll-free at 866-229-3663. 866-229-3663 and request a free catalog. What do you think, Al?
I think you've got another 90 seconds that you have to fill up. You're trying to get out of here early and leave me all alone on the program, and I'm not having it. Here, I've got something for you that just to run by. When we talk about pain medication, let's suppose I've got a pain in my back and I take pain medication. The question that crosses my mind listening to you explain this is, does the drug that deals with my pain, does it eliminate the pain at my back, or does it eliminate the perception of my pain in my mind?
In your mind.
I think that's right, and I think that's consistent with the idea that these problems, you know, these drugs are just... they are burning out part of your brain so you don't feel the pain. They're not stopping the pain.
Right.
They're stopping your ability to perceive the pain, and that's consistent with perhaps doing damage to your brain.
Well, and these drugs do damage to other organs like your kidneys, too. Those pain medicines are really rough on the kidneys. But, you know, I equate it to, like, you know, having a fire alarm going off and the fire truck shows up and the firemen jump off, run into the building that's on fire, and take the battery out of the smoke alarm, come out of the building, jump on the truck, and drive off.
Yeah,
They eliminated the alarm. They eliminated the alarm, but the building's going to burn to the ground.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You even get into something here that is spiritual in some regards. I mean, the good Lord's given you that pain, and it's not necessarily just to make you hurt and angry or whatever. Maybe you send it, look, this is a warning, like you say, an alarm that has to be paid, that we have to pay attention to. All right, Wendy, thanks very much. Look forward to talking to you again next Wednesday. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. at 866-229-3663. I'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to these commercials.
Everyone is afraid of pain. No one wants pain to rule over their life. And you don't want the negative side effects of aspirin, ibuprofen, or prescription drugs. They can lower immunity and cause dependency. Is there a safe alternative? I'm herbalist Wendy Wilson, and I prefer willow bark and meadow sweet herbs to control pain, fever, aches, and inflammation. God's herbs are good, and you won't be disappointed. Call Apothecary Herbs for pain or extra strength pain relief formula, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International, 704-875-8010, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Haddisk, and this is the American Financial Survival. I do the American Independence Hour on Tuesday nights. And like I said, we have our senior moments every once in a while. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Melody told me to inform you that her special today is one almost uncirculated $5 Liberty. That's nearly a quarter of an ounce of gold, and $20 face value of 90% silver coins. These are pre-1965 quarters or dimes. I think you get to choose when you place the order. But $20 face value, meaning if it was quarters, you'd get 80 quarters. Four quarters per dollar, $20, you'd get 80 quarters. And if they were dimes, of course, $20, we'd have 200 dimes. 80 quarters, 200 dimes. I think that's the way it works out. Total price, $685. That includes shipping costs. Again, one AU. That is almost uncirculated. $5 Liberty. That's nearly a quarter ounce of gold. $20 face value of 90% silver. Pre-1963 quarters or dimes. $685 and includes shipping. So give them a call at 1-800-375-4188. I've got Bernie Sanders won yesterday in the West Virginia primary. Here's an article from Nation of Change, which is a left-wing publication. And they're, yay, Bernie, he just won, again, the West Virginia primary. Sanders said, with this outcome, we now have won primaries and caucuses in 19 states. We're in this campaign to win the Democratic nomination, and we're going to stay here until the last vote is cast. Sanders also said he believes he would have a chance if running against Donald Trump. unlike Clinton. He says it's not only in national polls where we defeat Donald Trump by bigger numbers than Secretary Clinton. It is in state poll after state poll after state poll. So Sanders is there till the bitter end. Nevertheless, assuming she's not indicted, I'm going to assume that Hillary Clinton will win the Democratic nomination for president. But she's been the presumptive winner for a year or more, right? This isn't news. I mean, it's been presumed to a significant degree that she'd not only get the nomination, the Democrat nomination, it's been presumed that she would be the winner of she would win the presidency come November this year. A lot of people have believed that, and they've thought so. It's been, you know, strong sentiment for a year, maybe two. Donald Trump, on the other hand, has come out of a political nowhere, not being a politician. And nevertheless, he's eliminated 16 other candidates for the Republican nomination. That includes 9 former governors, 5 senators, a doctor, and a CEO. None of those other 16 candidates are still running behind Trump, still contesting. They're not running at all. They're gone. They have left. It may be that there have been other elections where one candidate won his party's primary nomination just 2 months or more before the party's national convention. It may be that they've had candidates that absolutely ran off all the other opposing candidates, but I don't remember. I don't remember any elections like that. Trump has steamrolled over all of his opposition, and these were not lightweights. Again, what did we have? Something like 9 former governors, 5 senators, doctor, CEO. I mean, Trump has just steamrolled over all his opposition. Meanwhile, the anointed Hillary has lost 19 primaries so far and is still bedeviled by a 75-year-old socialist and junior senator from Vermont. Judging by those 19 lost primaries, it's obvious that the Democratic Party is not united behind Hillary. They're not completely enthusiastic and say, "Yay, Hillary!" They may vote for, but it is not in their heart. You know, they're not just saying, they're not just overwhelmed by her candidacy. On the other hand, it appears that barring the unforeseen, Trump may continue to steamroll on past the Republican National Convention and on through the November election. He has momentum. Hillary does not. I don't know what the polls are. I've been meaning to check this out and look for myself and see what the polls indicate. But I have a suspicion that if you were to do something like a popularity poll, a poll that predicted and or a poll that predicted who was most likely going to be our next president, I have a strong suspicion, but I don't know the facts, that it would show that Hillary's popularity has actually declined nationwide over the course of the last year or so. What was perhaps originally what seemed to be an unbeatable candidacy is now something that people approach, you know, with a certain amount of, they're wary. They have a certain amount of caution. Nothing's guaranteed in politics, even though Trump has momentum at this time and Hillary does not. Doesn't mean for a fact that Trump is going to win the November election and Hillary's going to lose. But for the moment, Hillary's chances of becoming president seem small. She is not a favorite. She's certainly not a prohibitive favorite. We'll see what Trump does. If he makes enough stupid mistakes, Hillary may outshine him when they go head to head. It's hard to say. On the other hand, Trump may just come in there and blast her in ways that just have the same effect on her that he's had on Cruz and Marco Rubio and everyone else has gotten his way. For the moment, at least, it appears that Trump is something of a phenomena. A phenomena. Not just a candidate, a phenomena. It's like seeing a tsunami coming up. Oh, what's that? It's a tsunami. You better run. This is big. Here's an article from Bloomberg. says Bank of America strategist warns of imminent vortex of negative headlines, sending U.S. stocks plummeting. I don't know. This is the sort of article you read this stuff and you wonder. You know, is this, to what extent is this news? To what extent is this white noise? To what extent does it indicate something strange about our economy and our current system? It says here, and it's that in an appearance on Bloomberg TV, Bank of America Merrill Lynch head of U.S. equity and quantitative strategy, Savita Subramanian, warned of a vortex of negative headlines coming in June that could soon push the Standard & Poor's to 1850, back near February lows. You know, a vortex of negative headlines. I mean, what is that? Come on. Still, what she says is among the negative headlines she anticipated concerned the upcoming Brexit vote. She apparently believes it would be negative if Britain declined to exit from the European, terminate its association with the European zone, the European Union. She's also concerned about the June interest rate decision from the Federal Reserve. That's one of those things where you're darned if you do and darned if you don't. If you do raise interest rates, people are going to scream. If you don't raise interest rates, people are going to claim that you do not inspire confidence. Hard to say with the Federal Reserve. And they go on and she says the U.S. elections. She says we're heading closer and closer to the most polarizing election that we've seen in our careers. So there's a lot to worry about. One of the things we've noticed, and she goes on, and this is where it gets interesting. Well, first off, let me just say, does it really make such a profound difference? Does it threaten the stock market if England breaks loose from the Eurozone? Should that have a significant effect on our economy, on our stock markets? It may be that it makes perfectly good sense, but it doesn't seem to me that it should make sense. Our stocks and our markets and our economy should be a function of productivity and supply and demand. And to me, that's the way I look at it. These are political effects, and you wonder, is it reasonable to think that our markets should be vulnerable to these political effects, or is it unreasonable? For me, it seems a little unreasonable. It may be the way the modern world works, right? I don't deny that. But I look at it and say, should it work that way? And again, the interest rate decision from the Federal Reserve in June, I don't care what they do. How can they make a decision that's going to improve the markets? Is that likely to happen? I don't think so. It may be. It seems to me that no matter what happens, there will at least be a temporary slowdown, a decline in the markets that can be perhaps traced to the interest rate decision. It might only last a day or two. The U.S. election, June, she's worried about the U.S. election, the effects in June. That doesn't make good sense to me. I'm not able to understand that and just sit back. Well, the election is November. I don't see that anything's likely to happen in June that's all that extraordinary where it will make the markets go up or down. She said, again, we're heading closer and closer to the most polarizing election that we've seen in our careers. That's true. So there's a lot to worry about, she said. But here's the part where it gets kind of interesting. And this is where she offers a technical insight. And she says, one of the things we've noticed, and that means statisticians and analysts or whoever, people that are crunching numbers, somebody's picked up on the fact that about 6 months ahead of November in an election year, the market typically peaks and trends downward. Okay? Now, they've got some, the article doesn't explain how lengthy this data is. How long this data has been accumulating. She doesn't explain how long this phenomena has been observed or how often does it happen, a third of the time, half the time, 90% of the time. She doesn't offer any of that. But she's saying about 6 months ahead of November in an election year, and I think she means a presidential election year, the market typically peaks and trends downward. 6 months before an election would be about May 8th. In other words, right around now, if her observation applies in this year, It suggests that the stock markets are right now about as high as they're going to be, at least until the election, and they will probably trend downward for the next 6 months. Last week, Andrew Sheets, Morgan Stanley's chief cross-asset strategist, reported that he also sees reasons to be cautious. There are fundamental catalysts that could justify higher volatility this summer. He points to the UK's, United Kingdom's European Union referendum, just as the previous, was this woman from Bank of America. He's worried about the Spanish election in June. He thinks the China recovery that we see, it may slow by August, September, and fizzle. He says he can't rely on whatever he sees as the current Chinese recovery, and he's skeptical of the sustainability of the oil price recovery. Oil's up to 46. He is implying that he expects it to go deeper. Well, I don't know. This is interesting information. It's the sort of thing, though, that you wonder about. June. I don't know. Should the markets be adversely affected by events that are primary political? And I don't mean that they can't be. I don't mean that they absolutely shouldn't be. But there's something about it. Shouldn't our markets be determined by events that were less political? The fact that they are seriously influenced by political action is probably a reflection of the fact how big government has grown and how important government is. It's spending, it's borrowing, it's taxation. Government is the engine of this economy right now to a significant degree. It'd probably be wrong to say it's the primary engine, but it might not be completely wrong. If government is that big, every time somebody in government does something, the market has to react. Not reacting to discovery of a new oil field, a new supply of magnesium or manganese or iron. All right? That's not what's driving the markets. What are driving the markets is, oh my gosh, what have the politicians done this time? And that to me is cause for concern. It's the sort of thing where you sit back and you say, it shouldn't be that way. The government should not have that much influence in the markets. And yet, for the moment, they do. And they would argue that they're doing it for good reasons. They're trying, for example, a plunge protection team, which was established by Ronald Reagan back in the 80s. Why did they establish it? To prevent the market from going through another dramatic, sudden, and unexpected plunge. Right? Everybody would agree it's a good idea. Let's prevent the markets from crashing all of a sudden. We don't want the markets to crash. Well, yeah, we don't. But once you start manipulating the markets to prevent them from falling, how long is it before you sit back and say, hey, instead of just preventing the markets from plunging, why don't we fool around and tinker in this way and we can make the market go up? And that will encourage people to vote for incumbents. And the politicians say, yes, yes, it will vote. They'll vote for incumbents if the markets are going up. And these things happen, and people think they're for good reasons. And I can't argue that they're entirely wrong. And yet, I think we'd be better off if we had markets that did what they wanted to do. All right? They go up, they go down. They boom, they bust. Maybe we would be better off with less government influence, because they're only messing things up. I don't think they're really helping us long term. They're only twisting the markets, making them irrational, making them crazy, and they drive us to conclusions that are also irrational and crazy because we accept government's premises. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. An article from antiwar.com. And the headline is, Pentagon confirms U.S. ground troops in Yemen. Troops were deployed 2 weeks ago. Okay? The article says, hot on the heels of yesterday's admission that the U.S. has become militarily involved in a second war inside Yemen, this time between the pro-Saudi faction and Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Pentagon officials are also admitting that U.S. ground troops have been deployed inside Yemen and have been operating there for the past 2 weeks. However, Pentagon officials insisted that their troops are all at a headquarters somewhere and not in combat. We've sent in troops, but they're not in combat. You know, I don't blame them on one level for arguing they don't have any troops there in combat. We seem to get sucked into every war. It's almost as if there is a compulsion. Somebody having a war? Is anybody having a war and we're not invited? We've got to get in. We're Americans. We've got to get in there and, I don't know, expend some munitions and shoot some people and whatever else has to be done, but we seem compulsive in our need to be involved in war after war after war. And I have a hunch that the American people are aware of this problem. And a lot of people, I think, are sitting back and wondering, what are we doing, for God's sake? Can't we just get out of this thing? Let other people fight their own battles? You know, what are we doing here? Why, what do we have to lose or gain in Yemen? What? There's something there that's all that important. And are we fighting? What is our national interest in Yemen? Whatever we're doing, I'll bet it has something to do with assisting Saudi Arabia. Well, who knows? Who knows what game we're playing, but where is our national interest in Yemen? And there may be one, but it's not apparent to me. U.S. deployment within Yemen are just the latest in a growing number of small U.S. deployments across the world, representing the U.S. dipping its toe into yet another conflict. I'm reading from the antiwar.com article. given the small deployments in Iraq have amassed over 5,000 ground troops, however, these wars are not likely to stay small forever. Again, are our soldiers fighting for anything? Right, is that why we're there? We're getting involved in these small wars, just move a little bit in, a little more, a little more, a little more. We'll send in an extra 200 troops, an extra 500, an extra 1,000. We're not going to send in 5,000 all at once because that would attract media attention, but we can add them up. We can add to the supply of soldiers over a period of weeks or months. Just amp up little. People don't notice, and all of a sudden, ta-da, there's 5,000 ground troops there. We're talking about in Iraq. What are soldiers actually fighting for? Does anyone know? Are we really fighting for something? We are told that we have to honor our American military because they're fighting for our freedoms. Which one of your freedoms do you think are threatened by the Yemenis? The nation of Yemen, do they threaten your freedoms? What have they done? Are they taking away our right to keep and bear arms? No, that's Washington, D.C. How about our freedom of speech? No, that's Washington, D.C. Religious freedom? No. Well, again, Washington, D.C. What rights are our military fighting for in Yemen? Any? Or are we just trying to stir the hornet's nests? Going in there and just making sure that the war doesn't break down. And people, what, just kill each other? Can we keep stirring the pot until the people of Yemen kill or are killed by Saudi Arabia or whoever? What are we doing there? Here's one, John Kerry. He might know what we're doing. Doesn't necessarily mean he would tell us. But John Kerry, of course, is our Secretary of State, and here's an article from the Washington Examiner entitled, Kerry Slams Trump's Wall, Tells Grads to Prepare for Borderless World. Secretary of State John Kerry took a shot at Donald Trump during his Friday commencement speech at Northeastern University, to Northeastern University graduates, by saying no wall is big enough to keep dangerous terrorists out of the United States. And I would add, and neither is any law big enough, like the Patriot Act, to prevent terrorism in our country. Certainly not big enough without creating a police state. But Kerry continues. He says, many of you were in elementary school when you learned the toughest lesson of all on 9/11. There are no walls big enough to stop people from anywhere, tens of thousands of miles away, who are determined to take their own lives while they target others. Well, that's interesting conversation coming from Mr. Kerry, and I guess he's right in the sense that if you're willing to give up your own life, it's very difficult to stop whatever you have in mind. You hear Secret Service agents talk about this relative to the president. An assassin who's willing to die is very hard to stop. The assassin who wants to shoot somebody and get away with it, now he's vulnerable. That's a lot harder. Shooting someone, if you're willing to be caught and perhaps killed, no, not a problem. Shooting someone and getting away with it, that requires extraordinary amounts of expertise. And from that perspective, it's true that we can't build walls big enough to stop people from tens of thousands of miles away who are determined to, willing to give their own lives while they target others. But what if, as a lot of people believe, the people responsible for 9/11 didn't come from 10,000 miles away? What if they came to a significant degree from Washington, D.C.? What if they were mobilized by our own president, vice president, government officials? You know, anybody who studies what happened on 9/11 a little bit, it's virtually impossible to conclude that this wasn't an inside job. And here's Kerry. He said, he's supporting the idea that the perpetrators came from thousands of miles away. Well, I don't know what happened there. I wasn't there, and I don't know for a fact what happened. But I know enough about what happened where it is virtually impossible. There's no doubt in my mind the buildings were imploded. If I had to guess, half the country agrees with me. It doesn't mean we're right, but it means that the idea is at least credible. And who was looking, if it was imploded, somebody had to plant that dynamite. That means they had to go back into those buildings, both of those towers, the twin towers, including Building 7. They had to go in there repeatedly. They didn't just drop a hand grenade in a waste paper basket someplace and watch the buildings fall down. If they were imploded, somebody had to be there night after night, week after week, over a period of time while they did whatever they had to do to wire the building to make it susceptible to an implosion, where it could be brought down by, they'd throw an airplane into it, but that was just the excuse. The real cause for the damage was the demolition of the charges planted inside the building. Everything indicates that. And there's no way that Osama bin Laden and his merry men were able to break into that building every night and plant those explosives. That could have only been done by some sort of insiders. It had to be done with a complicity. And insofar as our government says, oh, it was done by these foreigners, they're the ones. If they're not looking, if they didn't find who is truly responsible, then the government is complicit in that attack. In any case, Secretary of State Kerry is arguing there are no walls big enough to stop people. Blah, blah, blah. So he says, I think that everything we've lived and learned tells us that we will never come out on top if we accept advice from soundbite salesmen and carnival barkers, talking about Trump, of course, who pretend the most powerful country on earth can remain great by looking inward, hiding behind walls at a time when the technology has made it impossible to do and otherwise and unwise to even attempt. Kerry also seemed to dismiss, well, he goes down and he says, let me get to the gist of this thing. And shockingly, he says, for some people, that is all they need is simply to climb under the sheets, close their eyes, and push the world away. And shockingly, we even see this attitude from some who think they ought to be entrusted with the job of managing international affairs. Again, a shot at Trump. And he concludes, the future demands from us something more than nostalgia for some rose-tinted version of the past that did not really exist in any case. In other words, do you have some sort of positive feelings about America? Do you feel like a patriot? Do you get a tear in your eye when you see the flag, or you think about the founding fathers and so on? Kerry said, "Ah, that was just a bunch of BS. You don't have to worry about that." He said to these graduates, "He said you are about to graduate into a complex and borderless world. Borderless means he intends to eliminate the border with Mexico. He intends to eliminate the border with Canada. He intends to unite Canada, the United States, and Mexico into a single economic unit, the North American Union, that will eventually, even that, those borders will be destroyed ultimately as the North American Union is wedded to Europe and to Asia and to Africa and South America, and we have a single borderless world. And what do we have when we have a borderless world? We'll have poor people from around the planet flocking to any nation that seems to be prosperous. They will come in like locusts, and they will consume whatever a prosperous nation has, and when that prosperous nation is driven into poverty, then like locusts, these poor foreign individuals will fly to the next country wherever they can find some semblance of prosperity. These borders are not an accident. The borders we have are something that must be protected. You must learn to respect and value your own country. If you don't, it'll disappear. And one other point, when Mr. Kerry sits back and he says, you're about to graduate into a complex and borderless world, he is implicitly saying that he supports this borderless environment. All right? He's not just telling people this is going to happen. He's saying, I support this. This is the way it is. This is the way it's got to be. Well, there is no proviso in the Constitution for anyone in our government to knock down the borders of the states, to knock down the borders of the United States of America, to create some sort of a North American union where we are wedded to Mexico and to Canada? There's no proviso for that. And when Kerry took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, Kerry implicitly agreed to support and defend our borders. He agreed to defend the borders of the United States of America. And now he's saying, oh, forget that, we're going to have a borderless world. Well, if Kerry's in favor of a borderless world, Kerry is committing treason. He's working against the people of the United States of America. He's working against this nation. You can't tie the United States to Mexico and tie the United States to Canada in an official and political manner without destroying the United States of America. And that's exactly what Kerry and many other of our politicians are preparing to do. They want to send us right down the river. They are working to destroy this country. And we see clue after clue that that's happening. And we sit back dumbfounded because it's hard for us to believe. It's hard for us to say. We can't look at our politicians and say, you're engaged in treason. And when I say you're engaged in treason, I'm not just talking about Kerry. I'm talking about Obama. I'm talking about most of the members of the Senate, most of the members of the House, and most of the people sitting on the Supreme Court. They're not trying to defend the United States of America that was once here. They're not trying to preserve it. They're not trying to restore it. They are trying to destroy it. How we got to this point, largely a measure of our own ignorance. You and I haven't done our homework. We haven't been involved to the extent we should have been. We've wasted our time watching Dancing with the Stars and the American Voice, the Voice, the Idol, whatever it is. Yeah? And we should have been paying closer attention. I don't know that it's too late to pay attention now, but we are certainly getting to a point where it may be too late. It's necessary for people to start reading books. You're going to have to walk away from the TV. You're going to have to stop being entertained, and you're going to have to start seeking to be educated. And you should seek to be educated on politics. You should seek to be educated on spirituality. You should be educated on economics. You don't have to learn it all, but you got to learn something. And why? So you can stand up at some point and say, no, I'm not going to cooperate with that. That's wrong. I'm not going to do it. When we don't understand our own system of values, we're vulnerable to people who would exploit us and perhaps destroy us. I'm out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis. I'll be back tomorrow. Melody should be here at that point in time. I hope you'll tune in. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? There never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money, money, money. Money in a rich man's world. Money, 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 always sunny in a